we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show. This is Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver, Canada. We are in the studio today with four guests. We're having a roundtable discussion on veganism. And here we have at the table Denny Batem.
Hi.
And you want to say hi to your daughter?
Yes, I want to say hi, Lemmy.
She's so cute. And Kyle Grava.
Hello, hello.
And Matthew Negra.
Hello.
And Jeff Regeer.
Hello.
So I actually forgot to say who all of you are. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourselves, Denny?
I'm a salon owner. I'm a new dad sort of the last few years. And I'm someone that has a lot of questions and interested in this and want to see where it all goes.
So you and I met in the summer, and I've been inundating your mailbox with funny vegan memes ever since. And you've
some
been
funny.
Some funny, some are shamey, but you've been a really good spirit about it.
I'm pretty good sometimes.
Yeah, what I love about you is that you do see the humor in it, even though sometimes there are topics that you are contributing to, and there's a little bit of shaming in there too. But yeah, you've been a good spirit.
What's more truth than shame, hopefully. But
true. True. Last night you and I watched the Earthlings documentary together, and so we're going to talk about that today. And Kyle, you watched the Earthlings documentary as well.
Yes.
And you are a firefighter.
I am.
And very much into fitness and health.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, tell us a bit more about your recent transition.
Yeah, so I guess where it comes from, for the last 4 or 5 years I've been dealing with chronic pain, and just the practitioner service in British Columbia just hasn't been doing what it's needed for my body. So I started looking for different avenues, and that started around 2015. And as I started living a more holistic lifestyle and eating better and delving into information, I've finally gotten to a point, actually challenged by you, just to go completely plant-based and see how that goes and treats my body. And with myself, I've transitioned to that in January. I'm not 100% vegan, but dairy's out, and I do eat plant-based, but I do hunt, and that's kind of my mainstay with my meat.
Okay. So yeah, when I met you, Can we say how we know each other?
Absolutely.
So I'm your massage therapist.
Yes.
And you came in, and like a lot of clients that I see, it seems that you've tried everything to try to find out where your problems are coming from. And I said, what's your diet like? And you said, oh, really healthy. And I said, what do you eat? And you said, a lot of meat and a lot of eggs. Mm-hmm. And I think you also said fruits and vegetables. But, you know, I'm not allowed to legally give you advice on diet as a massage therapist, but I did point you to some documentaries and to look up the NFL football player Dave Carter, who went vegan and his tendonitis went away, and he was able to lift more weights and run faster, and he was recovering quicker from workouts. So I guess that's kind of where you decided to delve into all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. And then here we have Matthew Negra. He's one of our experts today for these two guys to seek some advice from. You are a recent graduate of Boucher Naturopathic Institute of Medicine.
Close enough, yeah.
I always say that wrong. What is it?
Boucher Institute of Naturopathic Medicine.
Okay. And tell us a little bit more about you.
Yeah, so I've been vegan for 8 years, and I'm an advocate of plant-based nutrition for all sorts of health conditions, whether it be heart disease, diabetes, and so on. And I also volunteer for a nonprofit website called nutritionfacts.org, which is run by Dr. Michael Greger, who's one of the leaders in the realm of lifestyle medicine. And he compiles all the research on evidence-based nutrition and tries to make it really easy for the general public to understand what the research says, free from biases of the industry.
Yeah, I really love his website, nutritionfacts.org. That's something that I recommend to you guys. When you're feeling overwhelmed by all the latest research out there, one thing says this is healthy, another website says it's not healthy. It's really your go-to website to cut through all of that and get the most current research. And Jeff Regeer, you are a celebrity within the animal rights movement, not just in Vancouver, but I would say worldwide. Tell us a bit about yourself. Yeah, I know you don't like these compliments, but you are a big deal.
I know. I would disagree somewhat, but sure, I'll take the compliment. Yeah, so, yeah, as you said, my name's Jeff Regeer, and my the expertise that I'm bringing to the conversation is having worked as an undercover investigator in farms and slaughterhouses across Canada for 3 years. So when questions come up about what's legal and what's even considered humane certified in Canada, I'll be able to comment on those issues.
You are a great resource for that. And the three of us here, Matthew, Jeff, and I, do animal rights outreach together. And I don't know if Kyle or Denny, if you know about what we do when we're doing outreach. We go out onto the streets and we show the public undercover footage taken in slaughterhouses and factory farms, and try to talk to people about considering a more compassionate lifestyle and not funding those industries. Did you know that we do that?
You mentioned a little bit about that stuff.
Yeah, Jeff's a really great person to have there, because you'll get people saying, well, that doesn't happen here in Canada, and things like that. And he can say, well, you know, I've worked in these facilities. Allison, it looks like you have a question.
I have a comment, actually. Okay. I just wanted to let our listeners know that this is all being Facebook live streamed on video. So if you want to see what these very fascinating people that we're speaking to look like, you can go on to our Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver, and you can see them all there.
It's too bad people can't see you right now, because you look like Sarah
Palin.
It's all
right. You can see me in the reflection.
You're looking like Sarah Palin in those glasses.
Well, yeah, it's my new look.
It's your new look. I can't wait for you to start talking like her. So let's begin the discussion. I would like to start off with what the two of you thought about the Earthlings documentary. Who wants to go first?
Go ahead.
Sure.
So we got Kyle here.
Yeah, so how I kind of, just to preface before my opinion with that, how I kind of look at animals and our relationship to them, I view them as a tool for us. I do believe that we have dominion over animals. With that, we have a responsibility to respect them and, you know, treat them well. But I do believe that they are a tool. And I kind of separate that documentary into two sections. I saw film of stuff that was definitely happening in first world areas. And there's a lot of stuff that was happening in third world poorer areas as well. And when I saw the stuff that was happening in the third world, poorer locations throughout the world, I kind of give those people a complete pass. I don't think the education's there, and there's just so much, there's not a lot of money. They're just trying to survive with themselves, and it may not be right, but they need to be putting food on the table for their kids, and they don't have a lot of options for themselves. Things on the first world, I agree, like we need to do a lot better job. Treating them better, how we raise them, how we treat them, the spaces that they live in. I do think that needs to be changed, and I don't have a problem with that whatsoever.
And so, Jeff, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, the reason why, like, personally myself, I don't even consume animal products, not even like the humane certified products, is because you look at industry uses words like respectful, humane, certified, free range, organic, all of these buzzwords that, and they appeal to us because we as humans we're compassionate, and nobody wants animals to suffer unnecessarily. But when you look at not factory farming, not where 99% of animal products come from, when you look at the best of the best, like the egg industry, on the farm I grew up on, like in the hatchery, we drop fully conscious male chicks into an industrial blender, grind them up alive, or suffocate them in plastic bags. I mean, not only is this humane certified, or not only is this legal, it's humane certified. In fact, in Canada, we cannot buy eggs that does not involve this process. And that's not going into, I mean, I could go on for 20 minutes just on the nicest humane certified eggs. And as soon as we recognize that in their capacity to suffer, that these animals, they experience pain the same way we do. And yes, they're like cows, pigs, chickens, any animal, they're different than humans in a lot of ways. You're never going to see a cow in a radio station giving an interview, talking about an intellectual topic, but again, in a capacity to suffer, they suffer the same way we do. And I think when you think about it, and all one needs to do is to recognize that being born a cow, a pig, a chicken, it's not a crime worthy of slaughter, and I mean, they have done literally nothing to deserve what we do to them. So I think, yeah, I think virtually everybody has that compassion inside them. And I don't think anybody would unnecessarily harm an animal, but a lot of people think that consuming animals is necessary. But fortunately, and I'm sure Matthew will be able to speak to this, we're learning more and more about nutrition, and we're beginning to understand, well, why it is vegans statistically live longer, have lower rates of disease. So I guess the ultimate question is that we have to ask ourselves is, if we can live happy, healthy lives without harming another sentient being, why wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm. I agree. And Matthew, did you want to say something to that?
Yeah, Jeff kind of hit it at the end there, but a question for both of you. Are you against animal suffering? It sounded like you were.
So I kind of look at it going back before when I said that, you know, I view animals as a tool for us. I think there is collateral damage with them. Does that make that it right? No, but if you look at even, say, going vegan, you have to grow crops, right? There's animals that are going to be displaced, killed, have to be killed because they're coming, you know, they're eating crops or diseasing crops, whatnot. So I think with any industry, even like the building that we're sitting in, that has taken habitat away. There's been animals lost to that and development as well. So I think in all areas, it's impossible to completely take away collateral damage, but I think we do have a responsibility to minimize it as much as we can.
That's an excellent point, and it's a question I know I had, and so many of the vegans I know had as well. And what they found, and what I found is that, as it turns out, you're absolutely right. Like combines harvesting grains that vegans and non-vegans, but vegans of course will be consuming, is killing and hurting some unknown number of animals. Absolutely true. What I didn't know before was that most grains produced in the world are actually used to feed to livestock. And even if you say you find a farm that doesn't feed their, like, say, purely grass-fed beef, for example, these cattle, they're displacing wildlife. And in terms of efficiency, like factory farming, for all the negative things, aspects of it, it's efficient. But if you compare even factory farming, but especially the grass-fed, humane-certified free-range, they're far less efficient and actually a lot more destructive for the environment in terms of like greenhouse gas emissions, obviously land use and space. So if our goal is to minimize the amount of suffering animals endure as a result of growing crops and other fruits and veggies, choosing to eat a vegan diet is far less harmful to the environment.
And just to add to the whole combine harvester issue, they've actually done studies on field mice where they've placed trackers on field mice, released them into the fields, and they're actually not that dumb. When they see this big, loud, scary thing coming towards them, they get out of the way. So the numbers of them that are actually being caught in the harvesters and dying isn't all that big. And like Jeff said, we're still reducing harm on a massive scale by choosing to eat the plants instead of the animals. And I think it's important to define veganism here too, because veganism is reducing suffering and death as much as practical. And it's absolutely practical not to eat animal products.
Yeah, it's not, vegans are obviously not perfect. I mean, I don't have to look very far at myself to see that, okay, yes, vegans are not, being vegan doesn't mean being perfect. It just means doing the best we can with what we know.
Let's move on to Denny. What did you think about the Earthlings documentary?
Excuse me. I mean, I found it very overwhelming. I've seen lots of footage like that, but not that much, that intense for so long. You know, and I'm still sort of in the infancy of exploring all these topics. And it really, and thankfully, just really opened more questions. I want to have a lot more dialogues. I want to have more information. I recognize it's a given that what we're doing is, as humanity, is terrible for the planet, for animals, for things. It's there. And my thought is, how do we sort of make it better? Elimination of things is probably unrealistic, and to hit certain goals here and there are going to be unrealistic. And I see it as a scale. And I don't look for polar opposites. I look in the middle and how can we make it as good as we can and how to get there. And so, again, at this time, I want to know more about all these different things. It's so overwhelming and such a big thing for me to wrap my head around, having not really explored very much of this at all. I really want to just sort of ask questions, figure it out. And
so here's your opportunity. You have an undercover investigator who worked across Canada for years in mm-hmm. multiple industries. He also works very closely with Anna Pippis, who's a regular guest on our show. She is an expert in Canadian farmed animal law. She's a lawyer mm-hmm. for animal justice. And you also have an expert in nutrition. So if you have any questions now, you can go ahead and ask.
Well, I mean, yeah, after watching that, I didn't even watch the whole thing. I mean, it's still sitting there on pause, and I am going to watch the rest of it, but it just went in so many different directions. But, I mean, my immediate thought is, it started off, it said this is industry standard, and I had a discussion right away about whether that is sort of the standard, like legally the industry standard, or if this is looking at more the industry standards of what actually really happens behind the scenes, because, you know, everything is outside of how they should be governed, so to speak. And I'm wondering if these are exceptions to the rules, like if these are very specific, like caught, like images that are exceptions. And you know, when I was watching it, I did see a lot of people in there, and I think Jeff mentioned, like, most people don't inherently actually want to like harm an animal. But watching that, I mean, I saw a lot of people that, you know, if they're not sociopaths or psychopaths, they're at best a sociopath. And I know that's about how you treat humans, but still, like the treatment. I want to know how standard that is. And some of it was older footage, and I'm just wondering if it sort of just grabbed things to put together to make it all like a big vehicle to look awful, and it did, but I want to know now, like, okay, what's going on. And so I believe it's there. I want to know scales. I want to know numbers.
Answer that. I just want to say one quick thing. First of all, do you mind taking your hands off the table, because it'll vibrate the mics and they'll hear on air. It is proven that when a slaughterhouse moves into a town, mm-hmm. the rate of crime and abuse against spouses actually goes up, because working in that environment normalizes violence, and people who were not previously violent develop PTSD and become violent toward their spouses. But I see what you're saying. There is some extra violence that you see in those videos that is not required of these people in their job. So, Jeff, let's let you take it from there.
Yeah, I know, like, when I saw that kind of footage for the first time, I mean, I felt both angry and like at these people, like, doing just cruel things to animals that, yeah, as you said, are unnecessary, not part of the job, like punching a baby calf in the face or something. That's the most ridiculous things. You feel sad for the animal, and you feel angry. And so before doing investigations, I imagined that's how I would feel when I was working on farms and in slaughterhouses, when those things were happening around me. What I found was that's not what I felt like. When you work in this environment, I mean, you get desensitized very quickly. Like, I remember the first chicken slaughterhouse I worked at, and my job was to hang chickens upside down in shackles and send them down the line. And at the beginning, and obviously I'm going into this as a vegan, But at the beginning, I would apologize in my head to each chicken as I was hanging them up and sending them down to line to the horrors that awaited them. And after a week and a half, 2 weeks, that feeling went away. And you get to know the people that you're working with, and you recognize that they're not bad people. They're good people. They're just working at living in a culture that isn't sympathetic. That, I mean, and how could it be when your job is to inflict suffering in various ways that are necessary, but inflicting suffering nonetheless? It's, you can't remain in that state, like that state of discomfort. So your brain, you get desensitized. I mean, it happens, like, people in the military. I'm sure it happens probably happens to doctors, people working, like maybe firefighters, I'm sure it happens to as well, seeing, being exposed to that kind of thing on a regular basis. But to, like, one of the first points you made about, like, well, is this everywhere? Is this just a documentary that, maybe, like, with an agenda, and are they just finding the worst of the worst and just piling the most grotesque clips into a film to be as shocking as possible. Is my first investigation was at a dairy farm, actually in Chilliwack, like an hour's drive from here. And as with every investigation, I mean, it revealed like all kinds of just horrific animal abuse and neglect. And the media, obviously, there's a bit of a media frenzy afterwards, and there were headlines like Canada's most notorious dairy, and look at all, and the media would focus on all the cruel components that were documented. And I looked at it and I was like, wait, Canada's most notorious dairy? This is the first and only dairy that has ever been investigated. I was there for 30 days on one shift, on one part of the dairy. And I just, the dairy's chosen at random, and I just stumbled across the most Canada's most notorious dairy, and I would just happen to be there at the right time, in the right place, every time. Like, I don't think so. I think that's unlikely. But that's the way we see it.
Well, I was just gonna say, I mean, when you said that it was a random choice, that actually answered a lot for me, because that's the thing. I was thinking, why were you at that one? Maybe it was to be like, there was a reason behind it. But to find out that it's random is very interesting. But then, I guess, to further the question, what they were doing, it was horrific and terrible, but was it illegal? Like, were they doing stuff that is actually technically illegal and like, therefore just enforcement of actual proper laws and ethics, if you will? Would that have avoided what they were doing? Or it was awful, but was it actually still inside the legal sort of parameters? Because that's my concern, is that that literally the system is broken. Because there's always going to be people outside of the system, but is it, were they an exception to the rule, or are they kind of just how it is in the industry? That one.
An excellent question. What a lot of people don't know about animal agriculture, there are some regulations within slaughterhouses, within, like, on the actual farms. Mm-hmm. It's all self-regulated. Like the Canadian Food Inspection Agency regulates slaughterhouses for food safety reasons, and there are some, albeit very weak laws, there are some laws, like some things you're not allowed to do. Up until fairly recently, like this is only for the dairy industry, not for like egg and any other kind of meat. The industry creates their own code of practice, and it's not mandatory. I mean, it's just the industry has like a document that says, it'd be nice if you did it this way. This is how we think you should do it. Recently, the dairy industry's code of practice was given force of law. Now, it's still a very broken system, because who's inspecting that? As it's always been, it's the industry inspecting themselves. So for this kind of thing to come, like what the things I documented and any investigator documents, for these things to come to light, it requires the industry to tattle on themselves. And, I mean, I've never seen that happen before.
No, it's super good to know that, they literally are... Everyone was horrified to find this out, but literally they were kind of operating in a way that was allowed. Horrible.
Yeah, and I mean, another point is, if you were to look up like Chilliwack Dairy investigation footage, you'd see video of workers beating cows with canes, wrapping chains around their necks and picking them up with a tractor bucket with a chain around their neck. And what a lot of people, to the uninformed eye, it looks like this is just gratuitous abuse. But then you ask yourself, well, why are they beating the cows? And it's, for whatever reason, the cows are afraid, or maybe their mastitis is inflamed, and being milked is painful for them. Whatever their reason is, they do not want to go into the milking parlor, so they use canes that provided by the farm for that purpose, to beat the cows, to force them into the parlor. And when they wrap a chain around the cow's neck, it's because the cow has collapsed. A dairy cow would normally live 20, 25 years, but on a dairy farm, their bodies are wrecked just from the toll that intense milking takes on their bodies. Like, we've bred the cruelty into their bodies. Like, their wild counterparts would not produce half the amount of milk that dairy cows produce. So some of the cows were producing, like, 150 pounds of milk a day. That's, like... a human body in milk produced every day, so it's not surprising their bodies are worn out. So anyways, when they would wrap a chain around their neck, it's because the cow could not get up on her own, and you couldn't get in with a forklift, and obviously no human is strong enough to lift up a cow. So that was the method to get that cow back on its feet, get the cow out of the milking parlor, and continue production.
So what are your thoughts now after hearing that?
Again, like all this is very horrific. I'm not surprised. I am, because I like to think that we've, you know, really come along in the, especially the last 20, 30 years and made things better for animals, for the whole planet. But, you know, it sounds like humans doing stuff like that. I had a thought there and then it just left my head. My thoughts are, it's beyond me how things don't change, you know what I mean? And I know, like, I've heard you guys have actually made, a lot of great changes, like, you specifically been involved in some, and it's great, but, like, I don't understand the resistance, and I'm sure you guys feel that all the time. Is it, I know in the States they have, like, all this lobbyist stuff, and I hear about it, I don't know in Canada. Is the industry have people making sure that these laws don't change so they don't lose income, or is it just that it's not enough people caring? Like, is it?
I would say it's obviously the industry has an obvious financial interest in keeping the status quo. Like, mm-hmm. And I would say, like, the industry itself, it's not like these are evil people who are like, ha ha ha, we want these animals to suffer. It's just a matter of economics.
It's
and
money.
To give animals more space, that costs money. Mm-hmm. To give animals treatment, that costs money. To use cows that aren't producing 150 pounds of milk a day, that are producing a more natural amount that doesn't put a strain on their bodies, mm-hmm. Well, then you need more cows, and that costs more money. So it's not these people are like, we want to herd animals. It's like, well, no, this affects the bottom line.
Exactly, I feel like in this day and age of like the general public being a lot more informed, that they'd be horrified and expect the government, or I mean, I don't know how our system actually moves forward, but expects things to happen where that protection of animals would come slightly ahead of certain profits. Obviously, there's a give and a take there, but I would think at this day and age that enough grassroots movements going like, this is nuts, we can't be doing this, that there would be change. But obviously the industry is worried about the bottom line, but is there somebody protecting it? Do you know what I mean? Like, I know they have that problem in the States, like they have massive money making sure the laws don't change, but can't we just do that here?
Kyle wants to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to, when you said in this day and age, I kind of disagree with you on that. I think money, it runs everything, and it has from human history. And even just, I don't know, it was a couple of weeks ago, Canada changed their diet, right? But they didn't outright say no dairy, right? And they would never say that. Canada would never say that because of the dairy farmers and, you know, all those, it's all tied to like political parties and donations and all that, and with the USDA in the States and, sorry. Yeah, and I just think there's just people don't like to be comfortable or like to be comfortable and don't want to make a big change. And I think it's I equate the USDA and dairy and our eating habits with like big pharma and oil, and it's the same sort of thing in my opinion.
And so Matthew wants to say something?
Yeah, just to add to the whole Canada Food Guide thing. So what they did was they didn't allow industry to have direct influence into like the design of the plate. But what they did do, or what they didn't separate, was that they were allowed to, several layers up, people leading the dairy industry are able to talk to government officials, and then it can filter down into the people working on the actual food guide. So when you remove that direct influence, obviously we saw this huge, huge change. But like you said, there's still some of the money in there that you can see, and that's because there was still that little bit of influence, which you're right, that's probably never going to go mm-hmm. away as long as these industries are as powerful as they are.
Sorry to interrupt, we just have to take a quick break.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We played jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
So we're back with our roundtable discussion, and we're just going to speak with Matthew Negra, who is a recent graduate of a naturopathic medicine school.
Hi, so yeah, I wanted to talk about inflammation really quickly. And inflammation, for those who aren't aware, is this process in the body that comes whenever there's some kind of an insult or injury. So, you know, you bang your knee, it swells up, it gets hot, warm, red. And this goes on in our arteries as well. So when you eat oily foods, when you eat saturated fats, animal products, animal protein, it causes the inflammatory markers to be raised, which can lead to heart disease, diabetes, cancer, pretty much every kind of condition out there. So, now, Kyle, I understand you're a hunter?
Yes.
Yeah. So, hunted meat, or wild meat, I'll agree, is better than, you know, your conventionally raised meat, but it is still inflammatory. One common misconception is that because it has higher levels of, say, omega-3s, maybe lower levels of saturated fat compared to other types of fat, it's all of a sudden a healthy alternative, and that's just not the case. There's research in Australia where they compared kangaroos, wild kangaroos, which is one of the leanest meats on the planet, probably one of the healthiest, to conventional beef. And what they showed was that it raised CRP, which is one of our primary inflammatory markers, less so than the conventional beef did, but it still raised them. So you're not exactly doing yourself a favor when you're consuming these products, but it is the better alternative if that's the route that you're going.
Sure. When I do say that, it's not something that, I guess my question to you, is that based on eating meat on an everyday occasion, or what is, are those studies based on?
It's based on your inflammation levels before you ate the meat to after. So the meat itself had that effect.
Okay, so if, for example, like with how I kind of view, I guess, how I want to base my eating habits is I would eat my meat probably once every couple of weeks, something like that. That's how I kind of see it, because I do enjoy going outside. I love the activity, and I look at it too with friends and family who do eat meat. I would like to, you know, be able to have, give them a space for healthier choice and sustainability and whatnot. So that's kind of my reasoning behind that.
So is that the only time you eat animal products, though, once every 2-3 weeks?
Well, since January, I've only had animal products once.
Okay.
So I'm trying to, because I'm well aware of that, but I do like the sport, and I do see a benefit to that in my life, but I honestly see myself only maybe like once or twice a month, maybe, but I haven't in almost two, only a couple times in 2 months, so.
Okay, so yeah, so if you're eating that infrequently, that's similar to, say, the Okinawans, which are the fifth longest living population in the world. They eat meat once every 2 to 4 weeks, and they're doing quite well. Of course, the number one longest living population are the Adventist vegetarians, and we're all male here, except Jen, and the male vegan group did far better than any other group, period. But then there's so many other factors there that you can't just say because they're vegan all of a sudden they're the healthiest ones. So if you're choosing to eat that once every 2 to 4 weeks and that's the only unhealthy behavior you're partaking in, then realistically it's hard for me to say that that is harmful. But the problem is most people, even if they're saying they're only eating meat once every couple weeks, they'll say they're drinking only once a week, or they're eating out only once a week, they're having donuts only once a week, and pretty soon this everything in moderation turns into something every day. And that's where the issue is, because I don't think the words everything and moderation belong in the same sentence, right? That's a huge issue. So Are you participating in any of those other unhealthy behaviors, or are you pretty like no alcohol, no eating out? You
know? Yeah, I haven't had a drink coming up into 4 years in April,
okay. And
I don't do any dairy. I think that's completely unnecessary for all humans. I don't see an excuse for dairy whatsoever.
Okay.
Don't do eggs, nothing like that. So it would just be the hunted meat that I would put on my table, and it would be very infrequently because I am aware of the science behind it.
Yeah, and the rest of your diet is like whole plant foods, for the fruits, veggies, whole grains, like yeah. So from a health standpoint, particularly if we remove ethics, there's not much I can say to that as far as damaging effects, because it is so infrequent. And I mean, you can smoke a cigarette once every 2 weeks and it's not going to harm your health, like realistically. Exactly. We don't have the research to show that, but I'm willing to bet on it.
I just have one question. Yeah. I don't know if you ever dip into like evolution and evolution change.
Yeah.
So just with, you know, the no meat, like just our teeth, for example, right? Like how have you researched that, like back in thousands of years ago when humans used to hunt, right? That we've obviously been given teeth like this to chew and be able to be of more of a carnivore diet. Like what's the... any research or looking into that, would
yeah.
you say?
Well, I would say that our canine teeth, which is what people like to point out a lot of the time, they're actually very small. They don't protrude past the other teeth. And they're actually primarily used for sexual selection, so to assert dominance and to fight. Like, you look at gorillas, theirs are huge, but they don't eat meat.
Okay.
Besides maybe some insects, right? It's a common thing that we see, and often people like to say that it's for... consuming animals, but if you tried to eat, say, roadkill and try to tear through the skin and everything using your teeth, you'd probably rip your teeth out. They aren't designed for that. Also, we have studies on Australopithecus. I can't pronounce the name properly, but from, you know, centuries ago, and they looked at dental plaques on these animals, and they actually couldn't find even traces of animal products based on where they were located at the time. So, and stool samples have shown that we used to eat 100 plus grams of fiber per day. Now, if you're eating that much fiber, you're certainly not eating many animal products. So there's a lot of issues there in the assumption that, you know, this so-called paleo diet or whatever, we're consuming animal products on a regular basis. They were hard to come by. They're fast. You got to trap them. The reliable source of food is, you know, plants. You know where they are. You can run around to the different areas and get the variety of plant foods that way.
And yeah, and another just question about diet with you. What's your opinion on oils, olive oil, all that? I've read some stuff. Jen provided me with like the Engine 2 diet, and he's an advocate. Is that the same?
Yeah, same thing.
Okay, so
sure,
you
yeah.
So can I just get a little bit more in-depth reasoning and research as to why you should like be cutting oils completely out of your diet?
Yeah, so oils, I'm not going to say that there's enough research to get rid of all oils, period, 100% of the time. But oils, they prevent our ability to dilate our blood vessels. So that's how we get blood flow. So the studies were done where they put blood pressure cuffs on your arm, pump it up for 5 minutes, which certainly wouldn't be comfortable. And then they, during that time, they fed people oils, and then the other people didn't get oils. And those who consumed the oils, their blood vessels didn't dilate again after. They actually had problems with that. And what happens is your blood thickens and it becomes milky. It's called lactescence, because it's like lactose. And it actually can kind of clog up the arteries and cause angina, the chest pain. Mm. So most heart attacks occur after eating for that reason. Now, most oils, olive oil included, they'll damage the endothelium. They can cause inflammation like I said before. And that's why, like, the number one killer of vegans, most people don't know, is heart disease. They just have a lower rate than the other people. And that's because there's a lot of junk foods out there. A lot of people are eating oils. Heart disease is the number one killer of everybody. But we know when Dr. Dean Ornish did the research, published it in 1990, his lifestyle medicine trial before I was even born, that we can reverse heart disease with a low-fat, whole foods, plant-based diet with no oil. Now, certain types of oil, if you're to consume, say, extra virgin olive oil, there's some research showing that maybe it has a more neutral effect, but it's certainly not beneficial.
Okay.
You're removing all of the water-soluble nutrients, you're removing the fiber. Yeah, you've still got the some of the fat-soluble vitamins there, but it's pretty deplete. It's 120 calories per tablespoon of pure fat. Sugar is 45 calories in a tablespoon. So there's a huge difference there. That's a good way to pack on some pounds pretty easily. And then if you want to talk about coconut oil, it's like 90% saturated fat. It's going to raise your cholesterol levels, and that's not going to be good either.
Okay.
So, awesome. Given that we are having a discussion today about the use of animal products, I just want to go back to something that you were talking about a minute ago, Kyle, and a quote that I heard somewhere recently that I think is kind of funny. Getting your nutrients through meat is like getting oxygen through a cigarette. So we don't really need to eat it. So why don't we just go vegan? If we know we can live the healthiest lifestyle possible and not harm animals, and we're all animal lovers, why wouldn't we?
Direct it to me?
To anyone. I'm putting it out there.
I think for me, I agree with you with that. Like we should do our best. For me, I'm new to the sport of hunting. I love it. I feel like I connect with nature. And it's something that benefits my life. And like I said to you before, I think it kind of where you land on the scope, if you think we are on equal standing of animals or if you think we have dominion. And I think that's wherever you stand with your fundamental on that is where you're going to stand with that quote. So I believe animals are a tool for humans, that we have dominion over them. We should respect them and do our best. But that's kind of how I take it.
And Jeff wants to answer that one, and also Matthew.
Would you feel when we say respect, in that way? Actually, no. Before I even go into it, I just want to put a few caveats on the table. Like one, hunters, any hunter I've ever come across has never been like, yeah, I love hunting because I like hurting animals. Obviously, in fact, it's the opposite. I prefer to hunt because I want to circumvent the factory farming system. And it is true, hunting is objective, like the life of a wild deer is objectively superior to even the nicest farm in the country. So as long as we put that disclaimer on the table, like the question, like this is, you probably know this already, but I'm sure a lot of the listeners who aren't hunters wouldn't know this. When you hunt, say, a deer, like you want to aim for like the lung or the heart. You maybe aim for like behind the front shoulder. What you don't want to do is you don't want to hit the animal in the rump or in like the rear, in the gut. You don't aim for the head. You aim for, you want to like puncture the lung or the heart. And so, this is what, so in an optimal scenario where a mistake is not made, the animal is bled out. Like the experience for the animal is, I mean, obviously that terror at the beginning, and maybe the animal runs for 10 yards, maybe 50 yards, and bleeds out on the forest floor. That's what happens in the best case scenario.
Well, and best case scenario is you drop it right away. That's
sure.
That's best case scenario.
Sure.
And I just want to interrupt, and maybe that mother or father animal doesn't go home to their babies that were waiting. Just on a compassionate thought there. But carry on.
So, and we call that respectful. But would we call it respectful if somebody respected us that way? I don't think we would.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying before, is it depends where you fall on that spectrum. Like, you obviously think we're on the same level as animals. I would say, if you view them, like, I view them as a tool, I view them that we have dominion over them, and we're a stronger species per se. We're smarter, whatnot, we have the technology. So that's why I fall in line. So when you, like, flip the script, you know, I had this conversation with Jen. It's kind of like all of human history. You look back, the stronger nation devours the weaker nation. And that's how it works out in real life circumstances too, right? So that's kind of how I view it. Like if all of a sudden there was another world war and Canada got overtaken, like I wouldn't be saying like, you know, that's not fair. It's just what life works, the stronger overtake the weaker.
Yeah, that is how, I mean, that's nature. The difference I would point out is like we're intelligent and we're compassionate and we can recognize that, hey, just because say maybe I have power over an animal that is weaker than me, assuming I don't need to, should I use my power to inflict to take their life away but like the only thing that they have, and inflict hopefully less suffering than more suffering, but suffering nonetheless. Does the fact that I'm in this position of power mean I should use this power in this way, even though I can? I guess is the question.
And I, like I said, I totally get where you're coming from, and I understand. I think as a personal choice for myself, like I understand where you're coming from, but that I think that's just a personal decision. I get where ethically that it's not right, and it's you're harming if you don't shoot them properly, whatnot, like, and you're taking away from their mother or father. What's the case? It's not perfect, but go ahead.
We have to move on from this topic because we only have 10 minutes left and we're not getting to all the things on our list. But Matthew, I would like you to talk about testosterone and masculinity.
Okay, so might not be knowledge to you two that vegans tend to have higher testosterone levels than omnivorous eaters. And you can actually turn this on and off by giving someone animal products or testosterone dips, remove the animal products, it goes back up, and it just keeps flip-flopping like that. So there's this big idea, especially in the bodybuilding world, and there's a great documentary coming out called The Game Changers, where they really tackle this subject, where they look at plant-based athletes, but that you need meat to be masculine, manly, strong, and that's just simply not true. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, obviously, I understand like testosterone to a degree, and I know it more as a catchphrase. From your like working with all this stuff, what higher testosterone rates, what is that actually going to get me? Like, what do I see in myself with that?
Yeah, so I don't believe you need higher or lower testosterone levels as long as your free testosterone, which is the available testosterone, mm-hmm. is consistent. And that's actually consistent between meat eaters and non-meat eaters. So it's going to improve sex drive, muscle building, I mean, like, all the things that you kind of conflate with masculinity or manliness. And then furthermore, erectile dysfunction is a concern for a lot of people once you hit your 40s and 50s. And the main cause of that is vascular. It's due to your arteries being clogged up. The penile artery is one-third the diameter of the coronary arteries that go to the heart. So it gets clogged up a lot sooner than do your coronary arteries, which is why erectile dysfunction is actually an early sign of heart disease. Hmm. The medicine Viagra was used originally or was designed to treat angina, chest pain. But they found that it caused vasodilation somewhere else, and then, you know, patent that and jackpot. Sell it for millions or billions, right? There's in that documentary, The Game Changers, that I was mentioning, they actually do an experiment where they get people to eat, college-level athletes, to eat a meat-based meal, a grass-fed, organic meat-based meal, one night, and the second night they get them to eat a plant-based meal with the same amount of protein and everything, and they measured the duration, the I think thickness and whatever of their erections all night, and they were longer, thicker, harder. So that's just, I'm just gonna spoiler alert there. Yeah.
Oh, and I'm the meat eater.
Yeah. So it was so funny when they showed the results that I cried from laughing. It was, and it's not officially released yet, but it'll be coming soon this year, I hope. And then just beyond that, beyond the science and the health aspect, I don't think masculinity, like, there's nothing unmanly about using your power to protect those who are weaker than you and not able to protect themselves. So we don't need to consume animal products. And someone who is consuming animal products simply because they see a vegan diet as feminine or unmasculine, I think that calls into question their masculinity, because how is it that their masculinity is so fragile that they need to reinforce it every day, and not just every day, but three times per day, every single day? So that's another thing for listeners to think about.
So we just have about six more minutes. Is there a topic that anyone here really wants to bring up? Maybe two topics if we're quick. Matthew, you've got a lot of nutrition stuff that maybe we didn't get to. Jeff, do you have anything that... Matthew, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I got something. One thing that people don't really know a lot about is diabetes and what actually causes it. So it's a common idea that a low-carbohydrate diet will treat diabetes, that carbohydrates and sugar in particular are the cause of diabetes, but it's actually fat, and primarily saturated fat, which builds up in places where it's not supposed to, like muscle and liver tissue. And that actually causes insulin resistance. So you'll eat sugar or eat carbohydrates, your blood sugar goes up, you produce insulin so that your muscle cells and liver cells can take in the sugar. That's what it's supposed to do. But when it's full of fat, the insulin receptors don't work properly. So you'll pump out a bunch of insulin, you'll try to bind to the receptors, no signal gets sent, and the sugar remains in your bloodstream. Now, Dr. Neil Bernard, who's the diabetes expert in Washington, D.C., he's done studies where he uses a low-fat plant-based diet versus a low-carbohydrate traditional diabetes-type diet. And the plant-based diet outshines it in every way. Now, we have this whole idea of a ketogenic diet out there where people are trying to treat diabetes with it, where it's primarily animal products, super high fat, super low carb. And what they're saying is that they're reversing the disease because their blood sugar stabilized. But diabetes is carbohydrate intolerance. That's literally what it is. How do you know you're reversing a disease if you aren't eating any carbohydrates? Right? It's ludicrous. So they're further worsening the condition, just they're putting a Band-Aid on it and they're removing the thing that's actually going to show up on lab values, but they are still very much diabetic. And I think that's something that people need to know before they jump on board with something like a ketogenic diet.
Yeah, that is a big trend right now. And let's just talk about dietary trends and your general feelings about all of them.
Well, if you want to talk about keto or paleo or South Beach or Atkins, they're all pretty much the same thing. It's just changed its name because every time it comes out, the science very clearly shows that it is not healthy, it is not the way to go, and it's not going to lead to long-term health. But this plant-based diet idea has survived since, you know, 1990 when Dean Ornish published that research I mentioned earlier. And it's just getting stronger and stronger. Every year, I keep hearing that it's the year of veganism or whatever. 2018, they said it. Now, for 2019, they're saying it. They had the biggest Veganuary, which is Vegan January, of all time. And next year is going to be even bigger. This keeps coming through because people are being educated about what goes on in the animal industry. They're being educated about the environment. And they're being educated about what it can do for your health. Like, we can talk about animal suffering all we want, but we can also talk about human suffering. And the number one cause of death and disability here in Canada is heart disease. It is our diet. And we can choose to live a healthier, longer life.
And Danny, you have a sweet, beautiful little six-year-old.
I do.
And let's talk about what kind of foods you're feeding her. You did mention last night that you are reducing your animal product consumption. That's fantastic. But I think you eat out a lot, right?
I do, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you mentioned to me that it was challenging for you to go vegan because of that. And I feel that Vancouver is a city that has a ton of great vegan restaurants and also more vegan options on menus. And I mentioned to you that I do meet with head chefs of restaurants trying to get their menus changed, and that is working. So maybe you and Matthew can just talk about some healthy options if you wanted some advice on what you could feed Lemmy or what you could order in a restaurant.
Well, I mean, the first thing that popped in my head actually is, I mean, I've gone places and I see when people try to take like a meat meal and make it vegan, and I turn my nose up at it. I like it better when I see a dish that is vegan, but it's just like it's created of its own and it's its own thing. It's delicious. It's great, and it's like, instead of, you know, how do I replace a steak or hamburger or whatever, how about I just give you this really great dish? And Vancouver is really, really great for that. We have so many options, so many resources for just better farm food and whatever. So I am open to it. I mean, I find like eating out is bad. I'd say it's worse for myself. When I do have the little one, I do eat at home, and I've really scaled back the meat exponentially, just for health, for environmental reasons, for her not to have that same reliance that I do, because I'm having a hard time breaking my habits. I'm like, even sitting at this table, I can feel myself just being, well, why? Like, here's all this information. Why am I not? Like, and there's just this ambiguous hesitation I know it's the right thing to do, and I can't say yes.
But you might one day, and I will tell you that almost every vegan at mm-hmm. one point said, I will never go vegan. We mm-hmm. thought it was, you know.
Oh no, I'm saying I can feel that yes coming. I can feel mm-hmm. it even more at this table, and I don't understand what that little anchor is. I literally have no.
Well, just be patient with it and yourself. I mean, yeah. I see you as someone who is a hedonist. You really like to enjoy yourself. Maybe you're a bit impulsive. Fair. You're also really busy. And so that means that you are eating out sometimes and having to make decisions that aren't always in consistency with your values, maybe. And that is a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
So, you know, give yourself a bit of a break there. But if you want a list of recommendations for options that you can prepare at home and bring to work or whatever, I can definitely help you out with that in our personal time. But just being mindful that we are wrapping up in a minute here. Does anyone else have anything else they really want to talk about today?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. I think something we haven't touched on directly is the enormous impact that we can have. Obviously, there's the health benefit. We haven't talked about the environment. But I would say, if anyone wants to know anything about the environment, check out the documentary Cowspiracy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the entire. The film is only about the environment, and it's the most comprehensive film on that topic in existence.
Do you want to elaborate a little bit about the impact of farming on the environment for us?
I guess in a short sentence, I'll just say, I mean, it's the leading cause of acidic dead zones in the ocean. Species extinction, land use, deforestation. I mean, animal agriculture contributes more greenhouse gas emissions than the entire transportation sector. And obviously, among those gases, methane, which the latest studies show that methane, over a 100-year period, over a century, is 30 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than CO2. But check out the documentary, and what I really like about this documentary is they make it easy to check all the sources. All the citations are there. You can read all the studies yourself. Don't take the documentary's word for it. Read the studies yourself. And but in terms of the impact that we as individuals have is huge. Obviously the health and the environmental benefits are good, but if, say, you're an average consumer of animal products and you go from average to being vegan, over the course of just you as an individual, just your life alone, that's literally thousands of animals spared the nightmare of the slaughterhouse. But the impact we have is a lot greater than that, because anytime someone chooses to be vegan, that means everybody they know is going to be, or knows one more vegan. And just by knowing that one vegan makes you, just moves you one step closer to making the same decision themselves. So the power we have is enormous. So I don't want to, I want to highlight that.
Okay, well, I agree. And, you know, Danny, you and I talked about this last night. You're a father, and I think that your little girl would be so proud of you to know that you made that decision, and it will impact her future on this planet, and that you learned these facts and you made a change because of it. And so we do have to wrap up now, but I just want to thank all of you so much for being here. My heart is bursting with love for all of you, for what you've done, and Kyle, I mean, I just can't believe how long it's been since you've had an animal product from one conversation that we had. So way to go. And how are you feeling in your body, by the way? We didn't talk about that.
Yeah, I feel really good. Quickly. The energy and just the lethargicness has gone away.
Yeah,
I'm never tired
anymore. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we do have to wrap up. Allison, you take it from here.
Yeah, first of all, we have a lot of people watching on Facebook Live, so do you want to wave to everyone? You're on the air. You're not only on the air on radio, you're on video as well. Thank you, everyone. You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Also wanted to do a shout-out, a big happy birthday to Carl Loskin, one of our biggest supporters. It was his birthday yesterday. Do you want to wave to Carl? Jeff and everyone.
Hey, Carl. Happy birthday.
So please join us on the show next week on Friday, February the 15th, 2019. We will be having a feature interview with Dr. Will Tuttle, the author of one of my all-time favorite books, The World Peace Diet. Highly recommend our new people in the studio here to read that book. It's a must read, totally a must read. But he'll be on the air next week to speak about the topic of his brand new book, which is Buddhism and Veganism. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Go on to animalvoices.org to stream our shows. We're also on iTunes and on Google Podcasts. To end the show today, we will be playing a song here. It's called The Times They Are A-Changing, and we may have observed that on today's show. This is by the Brothers and the Sisters. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
it's her.